Ms. Bennett?
Afternoon.
Afternoon.
Right, read away.
Okay. My full name is Susan Bennett. I'm a principal environmental scientist. My specialist area is the environmental effects of discharges and their management. In terms of the issues with the proposed plan, Objective 6 is not qualified to a specific set of values that are to be protected, and hence requires an absolute absence of any reduction in water quality. It is not possible to have no reduction in quality for a new discharge, or for a discharge which is increasing in volume or reducing in quality due to population increases. Any new or changing discharge from infrastructure will result in a change to the contaminant load to the receiving environment and will reduce water quality, and hence would not be able to comply with this absolute requirement. With respect to Policy 15, I have similar concerns to those with Objective 6. Much of the infrastructure maintained by the councils are in areas where the water quality standards in the plan are not met, and I include a fair amount of evidence in my information in my evidence about that. And hence maintenance and improvement of water quality is required by the policy. The policy does not allow for remedying or mitigation of adverse effects from new discharges to surface water, but requires avoidance of effects, which can only be achieved by there being no discharge. This means that new discharges, either as a result of moving an existing discharge to a more appropriate location, or the provision of new infrastructure to service community and environmental needs, cannot comply with the policy, regardless of the degree of treatment provided. For discharges to land, the policy does not allow for reasonable mixing in the receiving water. The discharge of wastewater to land will result in the discharge of some contaminants to the underlying groundwater, which may require a mixing zone, both within the aquifer and within the surface water body to which the aquifer discharges. The policy does not allow for this, even though adverse effects may be appropriately mitigated. This could render implementation of discharges to land problematic, and I consider that reasonable mixing should be available. A similar concern applies to the discharge to artificial watercourses, which is dealt with in a similar way. I discussed in my evidence why reference to the New Zealand drinking water standard is inappropriate in this policy. These references have been removed. However, the policy states that groundwater should meet drinking water standards. I understand that this reflects the concern over increasing nitrogen and bacterial concentrations in groundwater in some areas of the Southland region. This issue would be more properly addressed, in my opinion, through the limit setting framework, with the community identifying where this is a concern, in particular which aquifer, whether it's a shallow or the deep, there's multiple different aquifers. Whilst understanding the economic and environmental effect of imposing any limit, specific groundwater quality standards could then be included in Appendix E, and this would be a much clearer method of addressing this concern. With respect to the definition of a mixing zone, the plan contains a definition of a reasonable mixing zone. The definition is highly prescriptive. In my view, whilst it's useful for the plan to provide guidance on what could be an appropriate mixing zone, the potential variability in the assessment means that this is a consideration that should be taken on a case-by-case basis, rather than rigidly constrained to a maximum size in the plan. With respect to the comments there on the rules 5, 6 and also 15, essentially, I just concur with what Mr. Garbutt said earlier, so I don't propose to read that.
Yep.
With respect to rule 33, which is the community sewage schemes, rule 33 is identified in the proposed plan as the rule which controls the discharge from community sewage schemes, being all of the sewage schemes operated by the three TAs. However, it only allows for the discharge of effluent to land. This means that the schemes which discharge the water fall under the general discharge rules. Then there will typically be non-complying activities under that rule. The limit setting process could result in a wide variety of upgrades to achieve the required objectives, primarily to reduce bacterial concentrations, particularly if more stringent swimming-based standards are adopted, and to reduce nutrients. These upgrades will need to be carefully staged and targeted to ensure that the most cost-effective solutions are employed and to avoid significant effects on the social and economic environment in the region. The flexibility to allow a staged approach to upgrades is best served by ensuring that the discharges and wastewater schemes are discretionary activities. The redrafted Rule 33 has recommended the removal of the need for the pond drop test, but the rule requires that the storage pond does not have visible cracks or defects that would allow leakage. Whilst this is an appropriate consideration in determining whether a consent should be granted for the scheme and the nature of the conditions that should be imposed, I don't consider it's a valid basis for a scheme being rendered a non-complying activity if such confirmation cannot be achieved. The TA submission is for overflows from sewer networks to be included into Rule 33. Sewer overflows are expected discharge which results from the nature of the older systems in the region. Their frequency and volume are being reduced, and this will be an extensive and expensive process, which is best controlled by the issuing of a consent with appropriate conditions. With respect to Rule 47, essentially, Michael, Mr. Garbutt's already addressed that one. So in conclusion, in summary, in my view, there are a number of issues with the proposed plan, which will mean that the effective management of the Southland region's infrastructure will be complicated. These primarily result from the policies strictly seeking to protect water quality in an absolute manner, without focusing on the identified value and objectives of the operation of the infrastructure, as well as the affected water body. Consents for stormwater and wastewater are frequently treated in the plan as non-complying activities, generally as a result of the upstream water quality in the receiving environment, which already may not comply with the standards. This status is not consistent with providing for such infrastructure to be operated and upgraded over the long term. Consider that the proposed changes to the plan as given in Mr. Dunning's evidence would resolve these identified issues.
All right, thank you for that. Kristen Lloyd.
Just one question. In your key evidence, item six, paragraph six, there are discharges to land now. So does your comments refer to new, existing, or other types of discharges to land, such as rural discharges to land, which I'm referring to as FDU, Farm Dairy Shed Airport?
My evidence is solely concerned with the discharges from the community sewage scheme, so from council's infrastructure, so it wouldn't be FDE type discharges. However, FDE discharges will in some ways be quite similar to a community sewage schemes, so it could be extended, but I haven't specifically looked at that in detail.
So I'm assuming that the mixing zone that you're referring to would be the same for both applications. Would that be fair in your view?
I think it would depend upon the specific circumstances, but it could be the same.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
No questions. Thank you.
No questions. Thanks.
Oh, thank you. Yes, I have a couple. In relation to policy 15, which is to do with drinking water. Now, the words say in that third, number three of the second part, which I think is 15B now, this is on page, I'm reading on page 31 of the revised plan with the section 32A, I think. Is that it? So it says...
Sorry, Mark, can I just interject there? Is that the 26th of May version that was done after our questions were answered, or was that the version that was attached to the 42A report? Because there's two versions.
I'm not sure. What I've got, what it reads here, it says, in number three, this is the second part, so that groundwater quality meets drinking water standards for New Zealand 205, revised 2008, where water is used for drinking. Is that what you
got? The version of policy 15, is it red font or black font?
Black.
Yeah, that's the old version. There's an updated version, dated 26 May.
So does the new version have those words, where water is used for drinking? Is that what you want?
Where groundwater continues to meet drinking water standards. They split it up in 15A and 15B.
Yeah. So I'm looking at 15B, number 3.
It's Resume number three.
Okay, all right. So you think that would be resolved?
No, I'm just saying there's an updated staff recommendation to this.
That was my problem. All right. Well, I'll have to leave that one, but I do have a couple of other questions. Going back to your original evidence.
So sorry, Miles, just before you move off that, if you have a look at the 26th May version and you still have a question, we can put that in writing to this witness, and then the witness can answer it in writing, if that's all right.
Yeah, sure.
So I don't want to cut off a relevant question.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. No, well, it may have been resolved with a new one, but I'll look that up. Thank you. I'm looking at your graphs, which graph the results of discharges upstream and downstream of various sewage treatment plants. And you say in your evidence that there should be some room for a deletion and that it's not possible to achieve an adverse effect, even though it could be very minor. But looking at some of these discharges, and take, for example, page 16, where you've got discharges from Balfa, Endale, Gould Road, Riversdale and Tokanui. So the first pair is there, it's BA upstream and BA downstream, which I assume is Balfa. And certainly there's a bit of an increase in the fecal coliforms there on average. That's the interquartile range, is that right?
Yes, that's right.
But then if you look at the others, well, except for the Riversdale one, where there was a bit of an increase, but the other ones are the Edendale Wyndham, the Gorge Road, and the Tokanui ones. There's basically no increase there. So what I'm saying is that it's possible to have a discharge that doesn't have a measurable impact on the environment, isn't there?
I think the difference here is if you had the issue that we have is the absolute nature. Mm-hmm. And on a theoretical basis, which if you're talking absolutely, you're talking about theoretical, if you have a stream and you have a discharge going into the stream which has contaminants in it, then that will increase the degree of contamination in that stream and hence cause a reduction in water quality. So on an absolute theoretical level, there is no way to have a discharge which contains contaminants and not have a reduction in water quality. So that is sort of the problem at the moment with the wording of the objectives and policies, is that absolute nature which kind of makes you consider the theoretical basis. Putting that aside, on a practical basis, yes, there is definitely occasions when the monitoring program that you implement is unable to discern a change. And that can be for any number of reasons. Sometimes it's that, you know, the change is so small that you would have to collect a very significant number of samples in order to overcome the inherent variability such that you can determine the change. It could be that there isn't a real noticeable change to actually see, either because the discharge is so small in relation to the volume of the stream that it really doesn't have any discernible effect. An example of that is the Kepler discharge from the Te Anau wastewater scheme. I did the assessment of effects on the surface water discharge, so in the Waiau River. So as a result of the discharge goes to land, it goes down to the aquifer, and then there was a plume of elevated nitrogen that moved towards the Waiau stream. So that there was a discharge into the Waiau. In the Waiau, the plan standard is no change in water quality. So in some ways it's quite similar to the absolute nature of the no change. Essentially when I did the review, the assessment, the degree of the change was, I think it was like 0.0011 change increase in nitrogen, which was essentially well below the detection limit, and hence for practical purposes, you couldn't discern any effect, and that was why I said, therefore it complies with the plan standard. So I think that's actually quite a good example of the difference between when, you know, the theoretical absolute versus what you can actually detect. And I think those three that you mentioned, where yes, the numbers upstream and downstream are essentially the same in terms of this data, and yeah, there's a number of reasons why that could be the case.
So it's really the wording, isn't it, to make sure that the wording is sufficiently practical to say that we don't want a measurable change, but you know, we're going to accept that it, yes, if you do put something in, you know, there'll be one more bacteria than there was upstream, sort of thing, even though you can't detect it.
Exactly.
So yeah. The wording of the plan needs to reflect that.
Yeah. And I think as well the wording that's in the new NPS, with the overall and also the discussion that they have in there, that essentially maintain means to stay within an attribute state, which gives you a bound, an upper bound and a lower bound, and you have to stay within that, which allows you to reduce it a little bit, provided that you don't reduce it to the extent where you drop into the boundary beneath it. So I think that approach of having, you know, a leeway for some degree of reduction, but that it's bounded and defined and you have to, you know, maintain within that, is the kind of change that we're seeking, in as opposed to the very absolute wording that's currently in the plan.
I asked this question of another witness, but does the regional policy statement allow us to do that?
I'm afraid I haven't specifically looked at the regional policy statement.
It doesn't talk about overall, it just talks about maintaining or enhancing.
Yeah, I'm afraid I may have to defer that one to Mr. Right. Dunning. I understand that there's other objectives and policies in there that couch, that introduce that level, but I'm afraid I haven't looked at that specifically myself.
Okay, thank you. Thanks, Mr. Chairman.
And just on that point, and either Councillor or Mr. Dunning might want to reflect on my comment, the NPS FM is the superior instrument, so we would have to give effect to that regardless of what the RPS does or doesn't say in the case. Just coming on the north band issue that you raised, this plan doesn't incorporate the north bands. Mm. It rolls over Appendix E from the old plan, which is stated in absolute terms.
Yes.
So, you know, we understand what you're saying, but that's an issue for the FNU process that the council will follow rather than this plan, unfortunately. I just want to check that the version of the plan you've looked at is the one dated 26th of May in terms of the staff's recommendations for us.
Yes.
Okay. So in terms of policy 15, I guess from our perspective that's a work in progress. Have you had an opportunity to look at the evidence from any other parties? Have you looked at, for instance, some of the evidence from Frontier?
No, I haven't, I'm afraid.
Now, you've given largely planning evidence, even though you're not a planner, but I'm not going to pursue that, but just be aware of that if you go to the environment, you're going to get in trouble if you give evidence on this. But you do seem to have a good grasp of the issue, so could you do a bit of homework for us? Could you have a look at the evidence of Mr. Willis for Fonterra and have a look at the changes that he recommends to us for Policy 15 and let us know whether or not the changes he recommends will satisfy the concerns that you've identified? Mm-hmm. And if you want to talk to a planner about coming to a conclusion on that, you'd be welcome to do so. In terms of the evidence that you pre-circulated, on page 17, the data's missing for to the tap proof, and on page 21, my copy of the data is missing for Riversdale. Can you give us a mental graph that include that data, or is the data not there?
Yeah, the data's not there.
Okay.
Yeah. Essentially, that parameters wasn't included in the monitoring programs
right. That
produce these graphs.
Okay. And in terms of that homework I've asked you to do on policy 15, are you able to do that by Friday week, so not this Friday, but Friday afterwards? Okay, that'd be great. And if you could then just prepare it in written form and just email it into one of them, to Joe or Felicity over there. If you don't have their email addresses, you can grab them and they'll set you up to us. But apart from that, no further questions, thank you. Okay.